Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I don't know if you can hear because they're quiet, but I'm surrounded by cats.
Blink twice if you need help.
I don't know what their plans are, but they're one of them's circling me now. I don't know why.
Does anyone ever know what their plans are? I mean, I thought that was sort of the ineffable nature of cats.
Solid point. I've lived with cats my entire life, and you nailed it. That is, I think perhaps the one fact we know for sure about cats is that no one can tell what they'll do next. Yep.
They have a plan. They're like Cylons in that way.
They got lots of plans. They just can't decide among the plans. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's quite warm here and has been for this week.
Ah.
So it feels a little bit like summer's rolled in. I don't think it's here to stay. It'll probably drop down a little bit again, but it's been like up to the 80s and stuff, and humid.
Nobody wants to hear about the weather, Dan.
Nobody wants to hear about the weather.
We had a heat wave earlier this week, too, but it's cold right now. Cold and foggy. So, yeah. We went back down. One of those teases, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
May tease.
I'm happy, though, because I want it to... Well, we're right in the midst of allergy season, and so I feel like at least I can see the downward slope from here.
That's good.
When it starts getting this warm, we get towards June. I mean, in a normal world, I feel like right around now, I would be, you know, prepping for my trip to
San Jose, for sure.
Because that's how I judge often the end of my allergy season. It's like, oh, time to go to WWDC. Allergies are basically over by the time I go to WWDC. Mm-hmm. And yet this year, everything's thrown off.
Yeah, nothing clarifies what is an allergy and what is not like a global pandemic. Only because I feel like there's no... I just now know every day when I wake up, there's no way that any of these symptoms are anything I got from anybody.
Right.
And so therefore they are most likely, it's like the purest, I've always had allergies, but it's like the purest strain of like, no, this is what your allergies
are.
Yeah.
Is this a cold? Is this allergy? No, yeah. No, and actually it's been pretty good for me. I feel like I've had a couple like, a few hours here and there, like parts of days where it's been like, this isn't great. But like, I actually dialed way back on my allergy medication this year because I felt like perhaps I was, again, it's always so hard to tell, right? Like in order to get a good idea of like, how are my allergies? Like, is this, you know, something that's actually being prevented by allergy medication that I take? Or is this something where it's like, it's actually not that bad, and you're just taking a bunch of medication that may or may not be providing any effect. And there's no way to tell without doing sort of a, you know, actual A-B test.
Yeah, and even then, it's different day to day. And
different year to year, and different season to season. But in general, my allergies are often fairly mild, and certainly I think, based on my experience of the last several years, much milder than when I was a kid. Mm. I definitely think mine have waned a bit in my adult life. But, yeah, so this year I'm mainly just sticking to the Zyrtec every day, and...
Yep.
Yeah, been a couple of bad days here and there, but it's really pretty livable for the most part.
But I'm just sniffly the whole season, and I always have Kleenex with me, and that's just life.
The big thing I wanted to do this year was I have asthma that gets triggered by allergies, and in the past I've taken like a daily inhaler, and then I had like a rescue inhaler type thing in case of actual emergency, and. One of the things that really annoyed me about my daily inhaler was it messed with my voice. So I can go back. I listen to, for example, I record intros for all the Not Playing members episodes that are on The Incomparable. I make these little bumpers and I have them all in one file. It's like one big GarageBand file because I just sort of copy and like redo the template every time. And I can actually go back and listen to ones and you can hear my voice change noticeably. Like it gets much hoarser. And it's when I'm taking my allergy medications. And I got really annoyed by that because I was like, well, it's a big part of my work. And to have my voice be all hoarse and scratchy at that point in the year, for the several months that I take this feels like it's just really annoying. And how much is this actually helping me? So this year I decided not to take it with consultation from my physician. I said, like, do you think it'd be okay?
Good.
It's like, yeah, try it. See how you do. If you end up using the emergency inhaler more than, two or three times a week, maybe then start taking the daily one to help offset that. And it's actually been fine. I've been totally good. I've only had to use my inhaler like 2 to 3 times overall in the last like month or two. And I feel much better about like being able to record things and being able to talk and not sound like I'm just, oh, I'm doing this voice. So that's been a plus for me this year, and I'm happy that it's worked out that way.
Okay, one cat left and the other one came. So they're like maintaining team. Like there's got to always be one cat near me, apparently.
It's sort of a zone defense is what they're playing. Yeah.
Yep. And she's down on the ground. All right. I don't even know. San Jose weather on Monday, 74 degrees, partly cloudy. That would have been possibly the WWDC weather, but we'll never know.
Yeah. Then or well, we want it would have been then or the week after.
Or the week after. When, right.
Yeah.
I had both hotel reservations.
But I didn't even get as far as making my travel plans this year, so I had nothing to cancel. Like by the time it was like when I was looking into making those things, it was already people talking about like, is this actually going to happen? So I was like, I'll hold off. Right now, I called the airlines this morning to ask about, I still have flights booked for Gen Con, which I was going to go to in August, which has now been canceled officially. Right. And I was like, can I get my money back? And they're like, well, no, you can get a credit. However, if we cancel your flights or change your flights, you can get a refund. And you can do that up until like the day before those flights would have been, which was August. And I was like, well, okay. So
basically, you want to
sitting on them.
You just want to sit in case they get canceled. And if not, then you'll get converted to credit.
Or we'll see if anybody decides that more stringent measures need to be taken and airlines need to refund tickets, which is a possibility.
It is.
Could happen.
Yeah. Did I talk about this here? I have I bought a ticket for to Dream On, which is
the Hawaii ticket,
which is to Hawaii for my birthday, and it's Southwest, so it's completely changeable and completely refundable into credit at least, and so it's good. It's not a big risk, but it also I kind of like having it there as the will this happen or not, and my enthusiasm waxes and wanes about whether that'll happen now. So
right, yeah, same for we had a lengthy trip planned to South Africa, which we have not yet officially canceled, but that was for September. So same sort of situation where it's like, well, how long can we go? We'll see when the actual deadlines for canceling stuff will be. And, you know, my wife has more optimism about it than I do, because I just don't think anybody wants to be on a plane for that long at that point. Even
I go
in
back
September.
And forth. I read an article that said that the air filtration on planes is actually really good, but having to wear a mask for 18 hours or whatever is kind of brutal. And Hawaii just extended their 14-day quarantine through the end of June. So, again, I'm not like counting on it. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. I'll just rebuild my plans. But I have started to think of like, what would that be like? And it's like, we just don't know what the future holds. Like if things are coming back and, you know, I'm still not going to want to go in a like a crowded room or something like that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I couldn't enjoy myself driving around and taking hikes and walking on the beach and stuff like that.
Sure.
So we'll see. We'll see what it's a. It's something, honestly, Dan, I think the best thing about it is it gives me something to think about that is positive about the future.
Oh, I totally get you there.
I had to take my mind off the present.
I had a moment where I had a bit of a crash the other week after my book came out, because that was kind of the last scheduled thing I had that I was like getting amped about. You know, it was my birthday and then my book came out and I was like, all right. And normally this is when I'd be gearing up for, you know, conference travel in several different places. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, I have nothing. I have nothing. Yeah. I mean, I'm excited to see the virtual WWDC. I think that is like actually something on my schedule of like, oh, it'll be something, right, to talk about, and we'll have lots of podcasts about it.
John
and we'll be writing
Syracuse is taking the week off, even though he's working from home. He's just going to take
it.
He's going to take vacation time, and I love
the
that idea
version
too.
Version of John Syracuse.
That was a cool thought I had not really thought about, which is, so if you're working from home and you're still working all the time, like and you need a break, I suppose you take a vacation day from working
my wife
at home
did.
And then just don't go anywhere or stay where you're not going, but turn your computer off or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, we have been debating taking a trip to my uncle's place in the Finger Lakes, because it would be possibly plausible since we just drive there.
Yeah.
And then all we need is groceries, essentially, and then we just don't have to leave the house there for a week or something. So that may happen.
Yeah.
There's no internet there, which is both good and bad.
Right. Well, That could be good. That could be.
But it
may
be good. It was just, I mean, there's water. There's a lake. You could sit by the lake. Like, all of that just sounds nice.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. I don't need to interact with anybody there. I can sit by the lake. I can drink a cocktail. I can read a book. And yeah, that sounds great.
So I wrote my thing yesterday about the thing that I built to automate the button press on my iPod.
Oh, yes.
Hi-Fi.
I read that. So I had a question for you about
this. All right.
Because I have a somewhat similar infrastructure setup that I think I wrote briefly about a while back for controlling a fan that is on infrared.
Yes.
And I'm curious about why you picked... So what was handy about the IR repeater that I bought was that it goes on Wi-Fi, but it's also Homebridge controllable, which
right,
was kind of cool.
So,
and yours seemed a little more complex than that.
I heard from a couple of people who are like, well, why didn't you just get, there are so many of these things that are on smart home networks. And the thing is that I very specifically want, and you read the article on Six Colors if you haven't already, basically I have an iPod Hi-Fi attached to my iMac. It power cycles with the iMac for reasons. But when you power cycle an iPod Hi-Fi, I don't know why everybody doesn't know this. It starts at a low volume. It actually default volume. I think because they don't want it to be a surprise and blast out your speakers and all of that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't go back to the same volume you had it before, which would be nice. And so every day when I start working, I have to turn on the iMac. And then I have to, when I start playing music, it's too quiet. And I have a little Apple remote sitting on my desk and I go up, 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 up. And then it's the normal volume. And so I wanted to automate this. And this is why the home stuff didn't appeal to me, is I want it to be controlled from my Mac as a startup item. So I don't want to use a home interface. I think Homebridge is an interesting idea, because if I used Homebridge, I could possibly look up a command I could send to Homebridge to make it send a HomeKit command.
Yeah.
But I feel like then I've got these other layers of complexity. And I felt like my application here was fundamentally not a smart home application. It was a computer application. Because what I really want and what I built was a startup item that's a script that connects to this little infrared blaster device and goes, send a signal like 6 times, 7 times. And when I start up, you know, once the finder opens, once the machine boots up, it just right then it goes boop, 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 boop. And then by the time I need to play music, it's at the right volume. And it totally works, Dan. This is like day 4, day 3, whatever. It's like it works. It's great. But so if that makes any sense, like
that makes sense.
There are certain applications like a fan or something where you'd really just kind of want to put your fan on HomeKit, because it's about you as a human being saying, like, hey, you know, one of the devices that I want to control. In this case, it's more like, essentially, it's like adjusting the volume of your computer from on your computer, except it's this weird external device that's got this separate volume. And I wanted that, the computer, since it has to happen at startup, because it can't happen at a random time. I can't put it on HomeKit and tie it to me turning on my light in my office, because the computer's not on at that point. Which means that the iPod Hi-Fi is not on at that point. And actually, the little infrared blaster is also on that power strip. So it's not on at that point either. They're all off.
Oh, man. That's even tougher, I think, in some ways, because some of those devices are so weird, the IR blaster ones. Like, the one I have is just... It sometimes feels like it's held together by a thread. Like, and sometimes when it reboots, it's like, I've forgotten everything you told.
This one seems pretty solid. I suspect it's basically a Raspberry Pi in there. It's a little black box, and I think there's a little Raspberry Pi in there, but the fact that I can connect to it via Netcat and send it commands and it just responds, it's kind of wacky. But it's great though, and I've got to thread it through, and it totally works. But I am talking to them about exchanging it for their Ethernet model, and that's mostly because I discovered that this one only will get on an 802.11b network at 2.4 gigahertz. And it won't work with my Eero network. And it's working right now because I have that old Airport Express, and I basically made a new network in my house called Button Pusher. that's a B network, and it connects to that. But now I have a second device that's plugged in all the time and a second Wi-Fi network in my house for this one device that pushes a button once a day. It's ridiculous.
I don't want you to do the math on how much time you spent on this and what the how many days it needs to run in order for you to get your time back.
I know, but Dan, and this is the thing.
But it's satisfying, though. I get you.
Exactly. I mean, this is very much like, for those who listen to ATP, it's like Casey List building his garage door project, right? It's like, it is satisfying. And the truth is, will it save me time? Probably not. Will it save me the annoyance that started with
mental
me saying every
overload.
Time I start playing music, it's too quiet and I have to go doot, 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 doot on the dumb Apple remote? But it's also the annoyance now that I think, why have I not automated this? And then we'll couple that with the fact that I think, why do I have a stupid Apple remote on my desk all the time? And it's because I have to do this thing one time a day. So like, it's not a productivity boost, but potentially, and I would say the last few days it's proven to be, a almost like soothing, like it just gets annoyance out of my life. But it's also it was fun. It was fun to explore and figure it out and ponder the ways to do it. And the one thing that you mentioned about Homebridge, I hadn't really thought about, but since I have Homebridge running on my server, that would have been another path, assuming there's got to be, right? Assuming there's a way for me to essentially a script from my Mac, a command to Homebridge to turn on a specific device.
Sure.
Which, now that I'm thinking about it, is actually, that's kind of brilliant, because it would make the devices that are on Homebridge like more controllable from a Mac than they currently are, because you can't really script the home app. The home app is really bad. So I don't
know. Right. Yeah. I had a long go around recently because I was trying to fix the whole like IR Blaster fan thing because it had broken at some point. And it turned out that it required not only like updating all of these packages, because I run it on my Synology, and I had to go through and update a bunch of the packages in the install and get new versions or whatever. And then it turned out that the latest version of one of them was causing this big problem. So I actually had to roll it back to an earlier version. And that was just a nightmare. Just a nightmare.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it works now, but like the amount of time I spent trying to get it to work, again, based on the trade-off for how often I use it, was actually not great.
I wrote about the new version of Homebridge a while ago, and I'm very impressed with that. That it's so much
better.
Yeah,
that's why I did. That's actually what prompted me to do the update, because I was like, oh, the new version of Homebridge, which is cool. I like the whole like web interface thing it has, which I wasn't really using before.
Yeah.
It's nice. I agree. It's fun. I mean, all this stuff is fun to play around with and solve problems with. But yeah, I think it's just, that's one reason I maintain a server, because I like mucking around with various things and seeing what I can do.
Yeah.
It's fun to have problems to solve. Actually, this reminded me of an issue that I was thinking about the other night, which is one of the, I was doing a podcast with our friend Lex Friedman, and one of the issues I was noticing, I was like, man, Lex, we're on Zoom, and like your audio doesn't sound great. Like, it's still, you know, a little distorted at times, and I don't know. And he's like, yeah, I know, I just ran a Nero speed test, and it was only, like, my upstream was much less than it usually is. And I was like, I would love it. I like Eero. I've had an Eero set up now for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, and I like it, but I really wish there was a more better like analysis tools built into its app that could tell me like, hey, why don't you just give me a list of which devices on my network are consuming the most bandwidth right now, for example. Like that would be, because you can look on each individual item and be like, how much is my laptop? Like, what's the upstream, downstream going from that right now? It would just be great if it gave me like a list and can help me track down some of these problems. Like, it feels like my network's really slow. Why is that? Let me press a button and then you tell me why.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice. It would solve so many problems, because I feel like so many people have Wi-Fi networks and just don't know that something somewhere is running amok, right? Like, I talked to, you know, so many family members who are like, yeah, the Wi-Fi is really slow, but, you know, we don't really know what's going on. And, you know, if you have a lot of technical know-how, there are tools that let you do this, but it still requires a fair degree of technical know-how. And I wish these products were a little better about helping you track down those things.
Yeah, I have found that this actually happened to me the other day with my mom. She said that it was like she couldn't get the TV to show TV stuff, and did she need to reboot something? And I was like, well, your TV doesn't reboot, it's just a TV. But in the end, you know what I said, which is find your cable box. There are two plugs on the back of it. One of them is power and one of them is video, HDMI, basically. Unplug them and plug them back in and see what happens. And that solved it, because in the end, a lot of times the solution is to just power cycle and then things work. I had that happen the other day where our network was behaving weirdly. And it was the Wi-Fi network, because I was in here on Ethernet, and the Wi-Fi network was behaving weirdly, and I just restarted the Eero's from the app, and everything seemed to have been fine after that. Yeah. And it's just like embedded devices sometimes get in weird states that they don't recover from, or they're doing something that's confusing, and if you reset everything, sometimes it just works. Occasionally, I will unplug and replug the cable modem. Same story. It will fix it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the big problem I feel for anybody who troubleshoots networking, because there seem to be two kind of problems with networking, right? There's the problem that's an actual problem, and there's the intermittent problem.
Yes.
And like intermittent problems have solutions, I suppose, but really it's just wait until it's a problem and reboot. Whereas there may be an underlying problem, and then there are the ones where it's like, no, you have something misconfigured and your network is always bad. And that's easier in a sense, because you can at least try to track it down. It doesn't go away.
I had a car for many years that had this intermittent weird problem, and I went to like five different mechanics and none of them could figure it out, and eventually, you know, that car was consigned to the dustbin of history. But it was the same problem. It's like, all right, this is the problem in these conditions, I feel like this happens, and they're like, yeah, we took it out and tried those conditions and it didn't happen. And we're like, if the car had been like clanking or, you know, spewing smoke the entire time, at least then you have symptoms that you can use to like reverse engineer and diagnose what's happening. So I totally with you there. I actually had one this week that came up that somebody had asked me about. Somebody asked me, is like, oh, I know you're an Apple TV user. Have you noticed that in the YouTube app, because I know you also use a Harmony remote with your Apple TV, have you noticed in the YouTube app the back button doesn't work anymore? I was like, I don't use the YouTube app that much, but let me investigate. And sure enough, it didn't seem that the Harmony back button worked to leave the app or go up a level or anything. I was like, this is peculiar. So, you know, I was like, well, all right, I'll figure it out at some point. I went to using the Apple TV remote whenever I needed that. And then I noticed this week that when I installed the new HBO Max app, it had the same problem.
Huh.
At which point I was like, well, this is enough now for me to investigate this. And I played around a little bit. And what it turned out, because I think I solved it, in the Harmony app, where you can assign things to buttons, if you go into, like, well, what did I have the back button assigned for? And it's like, oh, you have this mapped to the Apple TV remote back button. I was like, well, there's not really a back button on the Apple TV remote. And I went and looked into it, and it has different mappings for menu, back, and home. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, fundamentally, those are all the same button, more or less, on the Apple TV remote. I wonder if there's some, like, old, deprecated thing that's happening here with the idea of a back button, like it's somehow issuing a different command because it's from like an older version of the TV OS. So I'm like, let's just remap it to menu because I know that works. Sure enough, that fixed the problem.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is dumb, but you know, and honestly, if anybody, this is probably Logitech's fault. Other than, because I'm wondering if there's just something those apps
set up for Apple TV is using the wrong button for the button
right
assignment.
And I assume that maybe the Apple TV just changed something and deprecated how those buttons, it like calls the buttons or something, and maybe it used to accept more types of input than it accepts now. Who
knows?
Maybe so. But even so, Logitech should have tested there when a new version came out and made sure it's still working. But it was good to at least feel like, oh, I can go back to using the Harmony remote for most of the things I use it for.
That's good. I have found I mostly use the Harmony remote now with my Apple TV. I basically haven't gone back. I keep the other one around, and there are the only moment I really, I've said this before, the only moment I really regret not having the Apple TV remote is that I do, if I need to go a long distance in a video, it's so nice to be able to press the, you know, click the trackpad and then swipe. Way to the left or the right and go all, like I was starting a show that I had previewed the first like 5 minutes, and then I wanted to watch it with Lauren, and I wanted to start from the beginning, and the app didn't give me the option of starting from the beginning, which is weird. Bad app. You should always do that. And I hit the, you know, rewind button, basically. I'm like, you know, that's just, but that's it. That's honestly, that's it.
I guess
Siri dictation occasionally I do.
Although
I find I more often have an iOS device with me and will just use the iOS keyboard to type what I need to type.
And that's not the issue for me so much as there's one feature I love in Siri, and it's the "What did he say?" feature for where it jumps back 10 seconds and turns the captions on.
I love that.
I love it because there are so many times, especially when I'm watching a show for a podcast and I'm taking notes, and I'm like, oh, I missed something. I need that captions on. But like on the Harmony, you have to turn the captions on, then jump back 10 seconds. And I find a lot of times, based on how good apps are, you jump back 10 seconds and it's like, oh, you didn't turn the captions on until that point 10 seconds in the future. So now I'll turn it on. I'm like, wait, no, that's not at all what I wanted. So I have to jump back 10 seconds first and then put the captions on. And it's just like, now I've missed it. Ugh. So yeah, that's one thing I works really well on there. Is it enough for me to switch back to the Apple TV remote? Absolutely not.
No.
But I do keep it around for that.
That's what, yeah, that, it, well, I'll let you live for now.
Yes, today.
I'll most likely kill you in the morning, Apple
that's
TV
right,
remote.
Apple TV remote.
And the Otherwise, Apple TV remote is now the Dread Pirate remote. It's strange. How did that happen?
Someday they'll fix that, probably. Yeah. Probably not.
I had a fun... I got to write two things this week about HBO Max, which launched the new streaming service,
HBO
which is
Max.
Way more confusing than it should be. But I think in the long run, it will be simple to understand what it is. And I saw somebody predict this week that within 2 years, they'll just call it HBO.
Yeah,
and that'll be the end of it, right? It'll just be HBO. And right now it's confusing because there's HBO and HBO Go and HBO Now and HBO Max. But in the end, there will really only be one thing, and it will be what we currently call HBO Max, and they will probably just call it HBO at that point. And the reason
HBO
it's relevant
Max is now HBO.
Go now, Max.
Go now, Max.
So the truth of it is there are only a few, in America at least, entertainment industry giants, and we are seeing the shift from them having all of their stuff be on TV networks and, you know, cable networks and things like that to streaming. And originally they all just sold all their stuff to Netflix, and then they realized Netflix was going to build an entire business based on their stuff, and so they wanted to be like Netflix and have their own services. And after a long period of time where it's been like 2 years of the slow motion car crash of those companies realizing they need to not rely on Netflix as the output, but instead control the output, we now are at a point where pretty much all of them have finally at least launched their competitor service, HBO Max being owned by AT&T, which owns Warner Media, which is the old, you know, Warner Brothers, basically. And so they have all of the Warner Brothers material, and that includes shows they made for other networks, which is an additional level of confusion for consumers,
yeah,
which I think is funny. I was talking to somebody in a Slack that you and I are both in. Somebody said something that I thought was fascinating in how it was misguided based on lack of information, where they're like, well, sure, they've got Friends now, but but just for a while, and then it'll go back to somewhere else. And I said, no. Warner Brothers owns Friends. They made Friends for NBC, and they own it, and they control it, and it's returned home, just like how The Office has returned home to Peacock, because that's an NBC Universal show. And it's possible that some stuff will get licensed out from a studio because they'll find that it is, you know, something minor and it's worth the money that Netflix is playing. But basically what they're doing is battening down the hatches here and saying our stuff runs on our service. And that's there's going to be a lot of consumer confusion here because so much of this stuff is tied to a brand that it's actually not owned by. And, you know,
right.
Sometimes
it's
not like...
It's not what channel it was on. It was like the logos at the end of the show that
you
need to pay attention to.
The two big sitcoms that HBO Max is launching with are The Big Bang Theory, which is CBS, and Friends, which is NBC. But they are Warner Media properties, and so they're now on HBO Max, and they're going to stay there, right? Along with all the HBO shows and a bunch of other stuff. But then other stuff goes in other places. And then somebody was talking to me about... Sarah Gardner from the, I think she's in the comparable member only, but she said about, she's talking about News Radio, which is a favorite show of hers and of mine. And she's like, well, where's that going to go? What's its home? And I was like, oh, it's owned by Sony. Nobody knows where it's going to go, right? Because Sony has Crackle, I guess. But like Sony's one of these companies that is still sort of, you know, more just a producer of content and not really a home for content. And I don't think they're planning
also
on being
a maker of devices, which is an interesting mix
so
too.
It's a weird time, but I think in the end, it's going to be like in the old days where there was, you know, NBC, CBS, ABC.
A channel, yeah, exactly.
You've
except
got
it's the
like
production.
Netflix, Amazon, you know, Peacock, CBS All Access, or whatever they're going to give that a new name at some point here, HBO Max. Yeah. Like, they're going to be these six giant streaming services, and you're just going to have to choose or pay for all of them. Or, and I think this is actually a really interesting angle on this whole streaming wars thing, is I'm a Comcast subscriber with HBO, and they made the deal at the last minute, but HBO Max is just comped, basically, as HBO. I am an HBO subscriber, which means that Warner Media is getting their money via Comcast, via my Comcast bill, and I get their streaming service. And, of course, I will also get Comcast streaming service, Peacock, right, which is the NBC stuff. And I'll get that rolled into my cable bill, which is kind of interesting. In the short term, as a way to sort of build up a streaming service out of the money that is, it's like a great way to hedge against the future, to deal with the cord cutting future, is not to just say you must cut the cord. It's like, no, if you've got cable TV, you can still give us money for our streaming service. It's like, all right, okay, I see what you're doing there.
As someone who's a Comcast subscriber but only gets internet, I don't think I get Jack.
No, you might get. You could get an Xfinity Flex and get Peacock.
Well, it's funny, because for years I had the Xfinity, just had like a TV add-on. It was like $10 a month, and it came with, like, you know, you could stream stuff from your Comcast channels.
Right.
And you got HBO for free. And it was like, well, HBO costs $15 on its own, so I would be a sucker for not to pay $10, get HBO and other stuff.
And other stuff,
but eventually they raised the price on that, which when I just went straight to HBO at that point. But what also interested me was, as HBO Max launched, they also removed themselves from the Apple TV channels.
They did. They did because they want your money directly, and they don't want to be involved.
Sure, I understand, and it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like maybe now channels is gonna, other people are probably gonna follow suit on that. They are not gonna be the last big streaming company to say, maybe it's just easier if we take people's money directly.
Right.
But we'll see. I be like, that's the problem, is that what you're discussing is, like, sure, you used to have six giant networks, but there was an option to essentially have all of that packaged into one. But the axis has spun, and now the people doing the packaging are the people who own those companies that actually do the content production.
Right.
And so the question is, who would have the ability to package those into one? And the answer is, pretty much nobody, except maybe a giant tech company, but these are often giant tech companies too, so it's really probably no one.
I wonder a little bit if HBO Max is going to end up going back on channels at some point, because it really kind of makes too much sense to be in as many places as possible. It may be that just Apple flatly refused whatever
deal they wanted.
Right, like Comcast finally made a deal with them, but Apple's like, no, this is not what channels are about, and they're like, all right, well then, if you're not gonna cut a sweeter deal with us, we're gonna walk away. But in the end, you know, making your stuff available everywhere seems like a pretty good idea. I know that Warner Media, though, has had some, it's all very vague, but some aspirations to have their own kind of channel concept, because they want to sell, and this is where we get back to the cable bundle, kind of, they want to sell their own add-ons within HBO Max, which is also wild, because we were discussing how Warner Media already has a streaming service. It's called DC Universe.
Yeah, I'm so annoyed by this.
And it's more than just streaming, because it's got like comic books and stuff like that. But they did a bunch of original DC Comics related TV series for DC Universe, many of which are not on HBO Max, which is
bananas. And you asked the other day about like Swamp Thing. You're like, huh, there's no Swamp Thing. I was like, oh, I happen to have seen this story early in this week that the CW bought it, because, of course, they have no new shows to air in the fall, so they're just going to run that instead.
And they're going to run all 15 or whatever episodes.
10, 12, yeah, exactly. And it's like, but at the same time, there's a bunch of stuff on DC Universe that I'm legitimately interested in watching that is not there.
Yeah.
But there's some stuff that is.
Doom Patrol sounds good and got good reviews, and I haven't seen it. But it's just one of those things where it's like, what's your plan here? Because I keep thinking your plan should be all in on HBO Max. Not let's sequester some stuff and see if we can get people to also buy DC Universe. It's like, if I were running the zoo at Warner Media, I'd be like, all the originals from DC Universe are on HBO Max. Yeah. If we want to keep DC Universe around, it's going to be an add-on thing where you get HBO Max and some comic books or something. Right.
Like, exactly.
I'm not going to try to sell a different thing, but they have apparently talked in public about the idea of taking like little niche content bubbles that they
spinning
own
them off.
And then like making them channels inside HBO Max where you pay a few more dollars a month. And I get I mean, I appreciate the chutzpah of that, but it's like, guys, just sell your thing. You just want to get people on your thing. Don't withhold right now. Just
it's
let
like
everybody get everything.
If Disney Plus had launched with all the Marvel movies as a separate add-on, like
right.
people would have
gotten Marvel Unlimited.
Bananas. Yeah, exactly. Which exists. Like, but it's like as if they put all the movies into the Marvel Unlimited comic book reading app. And we're like, yeah, if you want that, you just subscribe to Marvel Unlimited. You get all the comic books and all the movies. Like, that's not the right
that's
way to slice this market because the intersection of the comic fans and the movie fans is not as high as you think.
Yeah.
Like, it's way more people are going to watch the movies than are going to read the comic books.
Plus,
and the comic books people will just buy the movie stuff anyway.
You spend all that money on Titans and nobody's seen it because it was on DC Universe, and you can sell it, and it's basically like another original for launch at HBO Max.
Yeah.
So why not put it there? But maybe they will. Maybe that's part of their plan is to roll that stuff out over time so it seems like stuff keeps getting added to the service.
It is funny it's funny, we gave so much crap to Disney, and yet I feel like their Disney Plus rollout has actually been pretty solid in terms of, like, they didn't have everything at launch, but it feels like...
No, my issue with the Disney Plus rollout, and also give them credit for rolling out internationally in a way that a lot of these services don't.
Right.
But my problem with Disney Plus is mostly that I felt like they didn't order enough originals. And there are some originals on there, and I know that they spread it around. They've got some original, like, nonfiction content, and then they've got... But, like, on one level, they have... Well, I know they have, like, they have the High School Musical, the musical, but it's like, from my perspective as an adult, I felt like the one show on there that was at all targeted at me was The Mandalorian. And that was great for, whatever, 8 weeks, 10 weeks. But, like, that's it. What else is there? And I'm now watching the Mandalorian making of show, and it's like,
which
great,
is good.
That's great too.
I mean, but and they're going to hit a bind too because the Marvel stuff that they had been producing is probably not going to air in the original time frame because some of it did not finish production.
So that's my knock on Disney. I think that their execution has actually been excellent. I just am a little surprised that they haven't leaned as quickly as they changed to say we're going to completely overhaul our company and focus on Disney Plus. And they did that earlier than most of their competitors, which is why Disney Plus is a more robust offering. I am surprised that they didn't put more content in production. And I know it's Disney and they got a catalog, but like having an old movie be available, even if it's an old Disney movie out of the vault, that's one sale when you launch. It's like, look at our catalog. But the way you get people, you continue to put yourself in front of them and say, this is why we're still relevant, this is why you should still pay, is to release new stuff. And they just haven't done as much of that as I think I would have liked. Although I did, they did do the new season of Clone Wars, right? That's a Disney Plus original. So they ramped slower
right? And the coronavirus just means that everything that they had on that ramp is now delayed even further.
But like,
compared
to Apple TV, which granted didn't have a catalog at all, but like they launched with like five originals and they have rolled out more originals. And and Apple TV's originals game is, I would argue, way stronger than Disney Plus's originals game. They have nothing, literally nothing else. But
yeah, I mean,
at least they did that.
They're looking at buying catalog stuff now because that was clearly their, you know, the downside for them is like, sure, you've got all these originals, but how do you retain people? Or make them feel like, especially once that free year runs out for a lot of people, how do you make them feel like they're still getting their money's worth when, you know, you could have legitimately watched everything on Disney or on Apple TV Plus probably by now. Like, even if there's new stuff that's running out, like coming out now, if they're not rolling it out week to week, you can watch everything in like, like 2 or 3 weeks.
Central Park came out today. But again, that's going to be whatever, 5 hours, 4 hours.
Exactly. And it's like, if that's, I don't know if they're doing that weekly or not, but if they're not, you could watch it the weekend.
You're right. They're probably not. They probably dropped like three of them or two of them, and then the rest will roll out weekly.
So, you know, that's...
It's fascinating.
It's interesting. Right? It is fascinating.
The reason there's so much consumer confusion here, these are times of confusion. As Tim Goodman always liked to say, times of confusion right now. But the reason is we're watching the TV industry essentially tear itself down and then build itself back up. And there's going to be some dust. Like, it's a mess. It's totally a mess. I do think it's going someplace that's rational, although my kids around the dinner table last night were like, so many streaming services, like, what? And it's like, yeah, I know, they're not all gonna make it, right? They're not all gonna make it. They're not all going to make it, and some of them are going to make a bundle. They're going to be bundles again. That's going to happen at some point, like whether it's through Apple or Amazon or whether they just make their own deals or whatever. They're not all going to make it. Some of them are going to be niches. Some of them are going to be for everybody, and some of them are going to belly flop. But right now, everybody's trying because they all think this is basically the future of entertainment, is that you go direct to the customers with your catalog and with your originals. And what I think that's true.
What I find fascinating about watching the movie/TV studios go through this is seeing how they have internalized the lessons of what happened to the music industry, which was a very different process. Because fundamentally today, you subscribe to, you know, Amazon Music or Spotify or Apple Music, you basically get the same catalog within, you know, probably a couple percent. There are far less exclusives than there used to be, I feel like. I can't remember the last time I heard, like, this so-and-so came out with a new album and it's only available on one service, right? Like, most of the time, they are available on any music service you care to go to. And the music services didn't all, integrate vertically in the sense that a lot of the TV studios have/movie studios where it's like, well, they bought up a whole bunch of different brands and then they got absorbed by essentially infrastructure companies. But in seeing the fact that they essentially, you know, a lot of the music industry lost their bargaining power, you know, when the shift to digital happened, I think all the TV and movie studios were like, well, let's not do that. Like, let's find a way to retain our content and be the one who are charging for it rather than it turned into a commodity that you buy in someone else's store.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. It is fascinating to me because if that had happened today with the music industry, think how weird and different it might have looked if you were like, well, I've got to subscribe to the, you know, EMI streaming service or something like that. Would be awful.
That
it would be
awful.
Really bad. And you know, it's not a perfect analogy because TV and video and music they're very different in terms of whether they're consumed. But
imagine you pay, and of course, we're going to reinvent cable by doing this. But imagine you paid $50 a month or something, $40 a month for literally everything that's available on television ever. And then they get compensated by what you watch. That would be what music services are. Now, I'll point out,
artists
don't make a lot of money from music streaming. It's a bad business model for the people who make the stuff. And is it any wonder that the companies that make TV shows are like, yeah, we're not going to do that. That's not how it's going to, because that's the cable TV model. It's every single person who has HBO on Comcast, HBO gets, I would say, appreciably less than what they get direct, right? But they decided it was worth it because there are so many Comcast customers who have HBO that they took the deal. But like, as Bob Iger has said this from Disney many times, which is, you know, eliminating the middleman is huge. Disney's whole future is direct to consumer. And they feel like they are going to be really strong because their brand is strong. And I think he's right. I think they are going to be very strong going direct and eliminating all of the middlemen. And, you know, there is something really remarkable about putting, like when I bought Disney Plus, I actually bought the bundle, the Disney Plus Hulu ESPN Plus bundle. And it is a funny feeling to put in your credit card and give money to Disney. I mean, it happens when you go to a park, but like all of their content is I give the money to Amazon or I give the money to Apple to rent something or buy something. It's not just like I would like to see Disney things. Disney have my money. Now I get to see Disney things. And that's good for them. But it's totally a different model than many of us are used to.
Well, yeah, and the music stuff is different too, in the sense that a lot of times you buy music and like your sort of your visceral connection with that is with the artist, right? Like, oh, I'm buying Taylor Swift's song, or I'm buying, you know, this band's
record companies want you to believe that people care who they are, and nobody cares about record companies,
right? So, which is extremely very different with a TV show or a movie.
There are exceptions, but they're the little tiny indie ones. But like, I remember it being in a movie theater, because movie theaters are the worst. Remember them? And it was one of those like pre-show. It was before they did the pre-show videos. It was a pre-show audio program. And I remember you could hear the corporate synergy because, and this stuck in my mind, which is like a really bad song played. And then a voice of a really aggressive like radio announcer guy came on and said, that was so-and-so's hot new track, such and such from Arista Records. And I thought, literally nobody cares what record company published this music. Like, we don't I know that there's some executive somewhere who's like, yeah, you got to say the name of our company. We got to brand this thing. But it's like, it's completely irrelevant. It's very, very, very rare that you that a record company, like Motown, right? Like,
or
it does happen.
Or, yeah,
exactly.
Like
I was going to say Sub Pop, something like that. SST, these like indie things, where you're like, oh, that's the voice of grunge, or that's the voice of the R&B stuff coming out of Detroit. Like, yes, but it's so rare. Generally, it's just corporate Monolith presents. It's like those logos right at the beginning of movies, where you're like,
there's like six different production companies, yeah, and you're like,
and it's worst. Either every single one of them gets a 3 to 5 second animation, and then when they're all done, then the movie starts, and all their names come up again in sequence in text.
I always enjoy that. But I mean, that's the thing too, is like, people don't have that kind of top line emotional connection with TV and movies, right? Like, because who do you envision? You envision probably the lead actor or actress in something. And that person is not usually deeply involved in the production of a thing. They are a hired person who is getting paid by the big company, as opposed to the artist in a, you know, in music, where it's a much smaller, right? Like, it's a band or an artist, and they are, you know, signed with a label, etc. So it's a weird disconnect, because I think people, you know, have that connection with music artists in a way they don't necessarily with a TV or movie production. Because you ask the average person, like, who's in charge of the TV show? Like, who created the TV show that you like? Mostly they don't know. That's like, people don't know mostly the names of the writers and the executive producers and whatever.
It does vary, like Shonda Rhimes, and she made her deal, and there are like Shonda shows, and they all have a feel.
Or Joss Whedon, you know, exactly. Like, there are people, but it's much rarer.
Right. And Disney, and this is the unique thing about Disney and Marvel, and it's the reason these brands are at the forefront of the interface for Disney Plus, is they carry a stamp.
Yeah, and that's the connection.
I will say that, like, so as a CBS All Access subscriber, CBS All Access doesn't carry a stamp. Now, CBS does, but it's like NCIS and stuff like that. And there is a brand there of a sort. But, like, at some point, when the CBS Viacom expands their streaming service, CBS All Access, to be something else, probably, like I said, I imagine they're just going to need to have a Star Trek channel, right? Because that's a brand that means something. Like, Marvel means something. But and that's the advantage Disney has, is that Disney means something. Disney is so specific, and also
their branding is so good.
So many assets that they have enough room to do Disney and Hulu and ESPN, right? They own three very different non-overlapping streaming services. And that's fascinating. By the way, Hulu's killing it. I've really been enjoying Hulu this summer, or spring, I guess it is. What time is it? This winter, today, 2099, what time is it?
It's possible to say.
I don't know. No, I've been watching a lot of Hulu to pass all of the time.
I actually have not, but I mean, I've been a subscriber to Hulu for many years, well, probably over a decade. But I was intrigued this week. I've been impressed with that, and I've been curious about, like, how Disney is sort of farming out content there, because we did come to that realization this week on The Rebound. We had a moment of realizing the whole, oh, there is no rated R content on Disney Plus, is there? Oh, yeah, that all goes on Hulu, doesn't it?
Right. So let everybody out there, wait for the stories, because this is a new segment called, or a recurring segment called, Jason Predicts Future Headlines. Somebody is going to have to make a decision, they maybe already have, about how to handle Hamilton, which is coming to Disney Plus in the beginning of July, so we're a little more than a month away. Because Hamilton has some F-bombs in it, and it has some adult content in it. And it is a beloved thing, a beloved document, that I have a hard time believing Disney's just going to release with the F-bombs dropped out and say, here you go, everybody. And yet, I don't know if they can release it untouched on Disney Plus, given their current kind of... So this is my open question, is what are they going to do? I don't think they're going to also put it on Hulu, right?
So you say a censored version on one and an uncensored version on the other? That would be wild.
And this segues to really quickly to a thing that I also wrote about. There was a really nice story in Variety about how they got the Simpsons episodes back into 4x3. Mm-hmm. on aspect ratio on Disney Plus, and the answer is they had to rebuild their whole like content archive data structure to have the concept of two different videos along with multiple audio tracks and multiple subtitle tracks, which is kind of cool. It doesn't really apply to a lot of other examples in the sense that I get the sense that all the runtimes have to be there, although theoretically you could have different runtimes and different audio tracks and stuff all in one file. But it did occur to me that they may be laying the groundwork for things like alternate versions of stuff like Hamilton, where maybe you watch the clean version by default, but the full unexpurgated version is there as an option.
Right.
I'm sure they didn't build Disney Plus with real parental controls in mind for content like this, because they would never do it. They would never have it. They would just take it out, like they covered Daryl Hannah's naked bottom in Splash by giving her CGI hair extensions.
Yeah, like that Back to the Future Part 2 thing that was going around on Netflix, too, that was where they like edited out the 1950s girly Mac.
So I think they may just censor it and that'll be the story instead. But I do wonder if there's an architecture challenge there that they're going to work on now that they've got The Simpsons out the door, which is actually adding the concept of some parental controls, not for really hard stuff being on Disney Plus, but for stuff that has a little more adult flavor that they're going to offer in a clean version, but they don't want to get criticized, so they also offer an option to watch the other version. I don't know, something to watch, because that's something that's coming to Disney Plus that has some questionable content in it in terms of the squeaky clean image of Disney Plus, and I don't think they're going to throw it on Hulu. But that said, Hulu's got a lot of originals. That's another funny thing. I mean, Disney is really about the catalog. Hulu really is about the originals. There are so many. They have a catalog too, and we've been going through Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and they've got a bunch of originals and all the FX originals now and the FX on Hulu originals. There's a lot going on over there. So, you know, Disney's got, lest we forget, Disney actually owns three streaming services and all of them are doing interesting stuff right now, because ESPN, although that's technically on the ESPN channel, but you can also get that documentary about the Chicago Bulls in the ESPN Plus app. Because there's no sports right now, which is kind of hard for that service.
There's no anything.
No, nothing. No.
Sooner or later, we're going to run out of originals too. So that's going to be fun.
Anyway, that's upstream for this week. I don't know. This is a big week. The HBO Max launch is kind of a big deal. That's a big deal. But next week we'll all be in San Jose for WWDC, right, Dan?
That'll be fun. That'll be nice.
Can't wait to see everyone.
Forward to
going to shake hands. Going to give people hugs. Going to stay within 6 feet of people at all times.
Yep, just going to crowd into that giant auditorium with 5,000 other close
friends.
Breathe
in deeply.
Yep, those will be the days. Those will be the days. Oh, boy.
All right, well, thanks to everybody. Long one this time. We had a lot to say about
TV.
Lots
to talk about, even though not much happened, but a lot to talk about.
Sure. All right, well, thanks to all of you for listening and subscribing. We appreciate you, and until next week, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.